from the crowd had died down. Everything had gone quiet. The heavy rasp of Grogan's breathing suddenly seemed very loud, and she could hear her own pulse thudding in her ears. An eerie stillness swept across the floor, and slowly, people began to back away, fear etched onto their faces. A shadow fell across Erin, causing her to look up. Her jaw dropped. "When did you get here?" Cheerful darkness crouched down beside her, in the form of a Cordolian named Rickle. Grogan went stiff in her arms, not daring to move. Rickle glanced up towards the ceiling.
"There's quite the network of walkways up there."
"You jumped down from there?" Erin could barely make out the metal walkways dangling overhead. They were so far up in the ceiling of the giant hold that they were almost invisible in the shadows. It had to be at least a 50-foot drop from up there.
"Better to avoid the crowds, don't you think?"
Rickle smiled, his fangs gleaming. Sighing, Erin released her hold on Grogan. "If I hear of any more fighting, I'll lock you in one of the lower cargo holds. Now get the fuck out of here," she hissed, stepping up off him. He rose unsteadily to his feet and did exactly that, hastily scampering off to whatever bolt hole he'd emerged from. In the space of barely a few minutes, all of the humans had disappeared. Rickle was a dark, sleek cat amongst wayward pigeons. He stood, once again invading Aaron's personal space. He had a knack for getting just a little too close for comfort.
"Formidable," he remarked,
studying her with a lazy, half-lidded gaze. There was a note of approval in his voice.
"It's good to have you back."
He was so close that Erin could see the tiny flecks of brown threading through his brilliant irises. He was so close she could smell him. He reminded her of the early morning in winter, when icicles hung from branches like perfectly formed shards of glass. He was so close she could feel his presence, dark and deadly, yet somehow reassuring, like a guardian devil. He was infinitely distracting, and if Erin were the impulsive sort, she might have been tempted to stare. As it was, she satisfied herself with a quick little glance at his ripped body, meeting his eyes before he got even the smallest inkling of what was on her mind. "Damn it, Erin, not now." She couldn't afford to get distracted right now.
"What do you want, Rickle?" "I need some human assistance," he said in a low voice. "We have a minor emergency."
"Have you contained the Zargek?"
"For now," he said. "We killed a few, but the others have retreated into space. There are at least 3 mature ones left. They will regroup and attack again. It's only a matter of time. In the meantime, we're losing oxygen."
"Hull breach?"
"Yes."
"And you need someone to fix it?"
"Yes."
"We might be able to isolate the area and shut it off." Erin thought fast. "Get me navigation," she said, activating her comm.
"Sergeant Barga?"
She recognized the voice of one of the navigators. She remembered his face, but she'd forgotten his name.
"Have you detected a pressure leak in any of the lower decks?"
"Yeah, in the refueling pod. We tried to isolate it, but the damn doors were jammed. They wouldn't close."
"They're not jammed anymore," Rickle said,
a cryptic expression crossing his face.
"We removed the offending object."
Erin raised an eyebrow at him in curiosity, but didn't press the issue.
"Are your people out of there?" she asked.
"Yeah."
"Try again, navigator," Erin ordered. "Shut the area off."
"Yes, ma'am."
There was a murmur of voices in the background. The navigator let out a surprised snort, then a pause.
"Huh, it worked this time. Airlock doors are closed. The pressure leak's been confined to the refueling pod.
Thank you, Navigator.
She turned to Rickle. There you are, fixed. Now, what are you going to do about the remaining Zargak? They'll keep attacking, won't they?
They're not stupid. They'll search for an easier entry point. They'll try to take us by surprise. This is a big freighter, Aaron. There's only so much area we can cover at one time. The plans changed. It's time to force the hand of your leaders, Sergeant. Tell them they can send in rescue crews. We won't harm the hostages as long as they don't impede our passage to Earth.
For some reason, she believed him. The Cordolians could be savage, but they seemed to take keeping their word seriously. But these things were never simple.
So, what's the catch? We're coming to Earth, whether they like it or not. If they want to shoot us down, they can say goodbye to any chance of ridding their planet of Zargak. Oh, and as you know, three of my comrades have already made it to Earth. I'm assuming your people have no idea where they are right now. Cross us, attack us, shoot at us, try to kill us, and they will rain hell on your people. And don't even get me started about what will happen when our general gets back.
Rickle smiled, but his eyes were hard. Aaron blinked. Why didn't you just say all that in the first place?
We wanted to give the humans enough time to understand the situation, and we wanted them to feel they were negotiating on even terms. I am sure that by now they've tried to contain the Zargak and failed. Now they understand what they're up against.
Rickle's expression became distant.
Whenever we turn up unannounced, civilizations tend to try and throw everything they have at us. It usually doesn't end well.
Aaron struggled to read him. The smile crossing his face didn't touch his eyes. His attitude towards her people was a mixture of indifference and pragmatism, combined with a certain arrogance.
We're here now, and we can do whatever the fuck we want.
That was how Cordolians treated the rest of the Nine Galaxies. It was starting to piss her off. So, you've just been hanging out up here while people on Earth have been dying? The Zargak had already claimed dozens of lives. They'd emerged in the sandy deserts of North Africa, and no one had been able to discover where they were hiding. Rickle gave her a long, hard look.
Perhaps you should ask your leaders those questions instead. We've made our intentions clear. We were ready to kill them from the start. We're just waiting for an official invitation. I'm actually surprised it's taken them this long. You humans seem to be capable of great indifference towards your own kind. In evolutionary terms, that's a failing.
Touché. His words sent a tiny chill down Aaron's spine, countering the heat she felt pooling between her legs. She'd been trying to fight that sensation ever since he'd appeared beside her. A super-evolved, biologically enhanced killer was lecturing her about her race's evolutionary failings, and all she could do was secretly admire his exotic, chiseled looks. She forced herself to think rationally. You're a handful of soldiers against an entire planet. Do you really think you could subjugate the entire human race?
Subjugate?
Rickle inclined his head, a quizzical look crossing his face.
We haven't been ordered to subjugate anyone. All we want to do is eliminate the Zargak before they take over your entire planet and turn it into a giant breeding nest. We like Earth better when humans are running it. But if we're attacked, whether it be by Zargak or humans, we'll fight to the death each and every time.
Rickle's alien logic was doing her head in. Aaron tried to see it from his perspective. The Cordolians didn't really care whether humans lived or died. All they wanted to do was kill the Zargak.
There were 9 of them, and over 8 billion humans. Yet they thought they could hold Earth to ransom. Because they possessed something humans desperately needed. They alone held the ability to eliminate Earth's latest scourge and humanity's direst threat, the Zargek. They had no escape vessels and no galactic fleet to back them up, yet they thought they could waltz their super-evolved, Kalidom-wielding asses into Earth and do whatever they liked. Talk about having giant-sized alien cojones. So, your boss will return at some point, and I assume he won't be turning up without backup. If you succeed in eliminating all the Zargek, what then? Are you just going to leave us in peace? Somehow, Aaron got the feeling Earth wouldn't ever be the same again.
Doubtful, Rickle said nonchalantly. Your planet's too much of a catch to leave alone. I'm surprised no advanced civilization has claimed it yet.
Huh, Aaron blurted, becoming aware of the ridiculousness of this conversation. It was unnerving to know that in the grand scheme of the universe, humans weren't considered an advanced civilization. Aaron's unease must have shown, because Rickle placed a hand on her shoulder. Even though his hands were covered by his strange armor, which extended to form seamless black gloves, his touch sent an electric thrill through her. The fine hairs on the back of her neck rose, and Aaron shuddered. He was the enemy. Why did he make her feel like this?
No matter what happens, Rickle said softly,
moving his hand so that his fingers grazed the bare skin of her neck.
I would not allow anything to happen to you, Sergeant Aaron.
Chapter 9. She stepped away from him, turning to retrieve her pack and that ridiculous, cumbersome weapon she'd been lugging around. For the shortest, sweetest moment, he'd connected with her, vowing he would keep her safe. Unable to resist, he'd reached out to brush his gloved fingers against the smooth skin of her neck, and he'd been pleased when her body had reacted. She'd tried not to show it. She was trying to be professional, but he knew. She couldn't hide it from him. He'd seen the ripple of pleasure that had coursed through her, raising fine bumps on the luscious skin of her neck. Sweet, soft, human skin. He wanted to put his lips there. He wanted to break her skin with his fangs and leave his mark. For one brief, glorious moment, their eyes had met, and for the first time, he'd seen a crack in the ice. Then she'd turned away, all business and efficiency as usual. Rickle stood in the center of a cavernous hall, housing thousands of humans, and watched as the female who'd captured his attention bent to retrieve her belongings. He'd become slightly obsessed with watching her. He'd watched her from his vantage point in the ceiling as she'd decked that big, stupid human male. Seeing her fight had brought his raging erection back. She was magnificent. He stole another look now as she turned away from him. Her fitted black suit stretched around the curves of her hips and her toned ass as she moved, and Rickle exercised all his self-control to hide his lust. His arousal was a wild, fierce thing. Its intensity was akin to the fierce killing intent that had consumed him back there when that silly old human had pointed a missile at him, risking Aaron's safety in the process. It had come upon him like an atmospheric storm, swift and sudden and unexpected. Lust and violence. He realized now that the two were connected. They came from the same deep, savage place. It had taken Rickle so long to learn self-control.
much longer than the others. He'd taken more beatings from the general than anyone else. Now, his hard-won self-control was threatening to unravel. He wagered it would only be a matter of time before he got the dreaded mating fever.
"I'm going to put in a call to the Federation," Aaron informed him. "But I need to go somewhere private, where I can access secure line. Not here. Follow me."
She slung her pack over one shoulder. The long missile thing rested on her other shoulder. Both items appeared heavy and bulky.
"May I assist?"
Rickle hovered by her side, gesturing towards the launcher thing. It didn't seem right that she was carrying all those heavy things when he had his hands free. Unexpectedly, Aaron snorted in amusement. "You want me to hand over an EI rocket launcher to your scary-looking ass in full view of everyone? That would not be a good look, soldier, but thanks for the offer." He had to admit she had a point. "I've humped heavier loads than these over much rougher terrain, so relax. We're just going up to the communications room anyway." She narrowed her eyes. "Don't you have any more Zargek to kill?"
"Not right now."
"No rowdy humans to guard?"
"They've been surprisingly well-behaved ever since..."
He shook his head.
"Never mind."
"No take-over-the-world-secret-strategy meetings to attend with your boys?"
"We've figured out our plan. We understand one another. There's nothing further to discuss."
She regarded him with an odd look as they passed rows and rows of empty cargo containers, shaking her head slightly. Humans occupied some of the empty containers, which sat on long metal tracks. Strange smells reached Rickle's sensitive nose. There was the typical, slightly unpleasant human smell. It combined with the aroma of roasting food and the lingering scent of processed metal. Hushed whispers followed them, uttered in strange, exotic tongues. It took a great deal of walking, but they finally reached a wide elevator. Its doors slid open as Aaron touched her hand to a panel beside it. The panels didn't work for Rickle and his team. They had to make do with the labyrinthine stairwells and hidden passageways that riddled the freighter. They stepped inside the elevator, and the doors slid closed. Aaron stood in one corner, staring straight ahead, and keeping a slight distance away from him as the elevator groaned and started to ascend.
"You were excellent,"
Rickle said, admiration creeping into his voice.
"Excuse me?"
Aaron turned to him, looking slightly perplexed.
"The way you controlled the situation, asserting your dominance... When that big oaf tried to disrespect you, you smacked him down. You are not one to waste time."
If she was at all moved by his praise, she didn't show it.
"We have a time bomb on our hands," she said quietly. "Any dissent has to be stamped out quickly. It's been a while since I've had to manage a full-scale riot, but as time goes on... Those people down there are going to get more and more volatile."
"Sounds like it's time to go," Rickle said, moving closer to her. "We'll use that human transport to enter Earth, the one you returned on."
Aaron shook her head. "You do what you want. I'm not leaving here until every last person is off the freighter."
"Oh?"
Rickle paused, trying to understand her mindset as she turned away from him, her expression stony. With the exception of Aaron, he didn't think much of the humans he'd encountered so far. The idea of selflessly sticking around to ensure the safety of a bunch of humans was something he never would have considered.
But Erin seemed to be protective of her people. Her scent was taunting him again. As Rickle clenched his teeth, his fangs broke the skin of his lower lip. The bitter taste of his own black blood filled his mouth. Erin looked away, staring at the wall, refusing to make eye contact with him.
"Why don't you melt just a little bit, my Ashika?"
They were alone inside this primitive metal box. Rickle had been alone with her before, but this was the first time they were confined together in such close quarters. What was he supposed to do now? 100 possibilities ran through his mind. He could disarm her, restrain her, strip her naked, and make her his. Physically, she was no match for him. He would claim her body and make her experience the greatest pleasure she'd ever known. Surely humans possessed the same pleasure centers and erotic zones as Cordolians. She'd crave only his touch. She would beg for it. After he was done with her, she wouldn't be able to even look at another male. The thought had crossed his mind more than once. It was the Cordolian thing to do. But subjugation had always left a bitter taste in his mouth.
"I like you, Erin," he blurted instead, affection swelling in his chest.
He smiled, licking his lips to get rid of the aftertaste of blood. The elevator shuddered, lumbering slowly upwards on the crude mechanism that propelled it. A strong, rapid thudding sound reached his ears. It was the sound of her beating heart. She slowly turned to face him, and her lips were slightly parted, glistening with a trace of moisture. "Rickle," she said in a serious voice, "are you flirting with me?"
Chapter 10. The elevator shuddered again, its rough metal floor shaking under Aaron's feet. Rickle blinked, appearing confused.
"Flirting? I don't know what that is. I was just speaking the truth."
His smile, when she thought about it, was rather endearing. It was as if he was completely unaware that his fangs and his sharp elfin features made him appear totally menacing, and that wasn't even taking into account the arsenal of weapons strapped to his body. He was flirting with her. He'd been doing it ever since he'd briefly taken her hostage on Fortuna Tau. And Erin was doing her best to studiously ignore him, even though he apparently liked her. Even though she found herself foolishly unafraid of him. His manner was dangerously disarming, especially when he flashed that brilliant, sharp-toothed smile at her. Erin took a deep breath to steady her beating heart as the elevator groaned. It was taking an unusually long time to reach the communications room, which was located on the uppermost deck. These old cargo freighters were rigged with some decidedly dodgy engineering, but surely the freight elevators were faster than this. The shaking became more intense, and a loud screech tore through the elevator shaft. Erin swore in English, tapping her comm to activate it.
"Navigation, can you tell me what the situation is with Service Elevator 4? We seem to be grinding to a halt."
No response. A panel on the wall flashed red and amber, but it was all diagrammatic engineering gibberish, and Erin couldn't understand any of it. The elevator shook as if they were caught in a massive earthquake, and then it stopped moving altogether.
"Great," Erin groaned.
She was now officially trapped inside a confined space with the most beautiful creature she'd ever seen, and he liked her.
"Your machine is broken," Rickle remarked.
"Yeah," Aaron replied. She noticed the emergency call panel on the wall, pressing it with her palm. In this current state of chaos, she doubted anyone, robot or otherwise, would come, but anything was worth a try. This was another unexpected pain in the ass. She needed to get to the communications room to access a secure line. Because of the network blackout, none of her wireless devices would be able to reach Earth. Rickle strode across to the sliding doors and tried to wedge his fingers between them. What was he going to do? Force them apart with his bare hands? If it was him, he could probably manage. He dug his fingers in, but he couldn't find any purchase. He stepped back and drew his sword as the lights began to flicker. What are you going to do with that? Aaron couldn't see how that curved blade of his might be helpful right now. Rickle turned to her, his silver features swimming in and out of her vision as they were bathed in alternating beats of darkness and light. Just wait. His golden eyes were almost luminescent, and as the light flickered like a strobe, he turned and stabbed the sword into the elevator doors. Aaron caught a glimpse of his powerful shoulders as they bunched and flexed. The blade easily penetrated the thick metal. Rickle gripped the hilt with both hands, pulling the blade across. There was a great screech as he sliced through the elevator doors like they were butter, creating a convenient, person-sized hole. He kicked with one leg, and the two metal halves of the doors fell away, slipping to the floor below. There was a loud clatter as they landed on some hard surface beneath them. "Freak," she muttered under her breath in English, but it was more an expression of wonder rather than scorn. Kalidom could cut through anything. Rickle had said it many times, and Aaron finally believed it.
"We seem to be between levels," Rickle informed her, as the flickering light finally went out.
Aaron's world was plunged into darkness. She swore, dropping her pack and setting the rocket launcher down gently beside it. She started to fumble through her pack, searching for the familiar shape of her link band. The damn thing received no reception up here, but she could use its small guide light.
"Can I help you out?"
Rickle's voice was a whisper against her ear, startling her.
Shit, when had he moved?
Judging from the direction of his voice, he was crouching down beside her.
"I'm here," he said softly. "So close. Shit. Where was he?"
Without thinking, Aaron reached out with one hand, thinking she'd grasp only air. What she got instead was hair.
He was so close to her.
Aaron suppressed the urge to gasp as an image of Rickle's pale hair entered her mind. From memory, she knew it was the color of moonlight, cut short, but not as short as some of the other Cordolians. It wasn't done in a buzz cut, but rather in a slightly messy crop that accentuated his sharp features. It was impossibly soft and silky. She hadn't been expecting that. She withdrew as if she'd been burned, but not before he grasped her wrist, gently stroking the inner aspect with his thumb. His hands were bare. How had he managed that? She was grateful for the darkness as it hid her reaction. But then she remembered something.
"You can see in the dark, can't you?"
"I can." She moved his thumb so that it was pressed gently against her radial pulse. His hands were surprisingly warm, and the sensation of his bare skin on hers sent a thrill shooting down her arm and into her chest.
"Jesus, Rickle," she breathed, pulling away from him. "Help me find my link band."
He let out a low rumble of satisfaction.
"What's that?"
"The black thing I usually wear on my wrist. You might have noticed it before. It's in the front pocket of my pack."
"Ah."
there was the sound of zipping and rustling material. Moments later, he was pressing something into her palm. Aaron activated the light, bathing them in a faint blue glow. Rickle's golden gaze was impossibly intense in the dim light. He'd been watching her the whole time, and she hadn't been able to see him. Inwardly, Aaron cringed. What had she revealed to him in the darkness?
"Let's go," he said,
this time picking up her pack and the EI launcher without asking. He carried them effortlessly as Aaron rose to her feet, strapping the link band to her wrist. Aaron looked up and saw that there was an oval-shaped hole in the middle of the elevator's giant metal doors. They were, indeed, stuck between levels, but Rickle's blade had actually managed to carve through the 2-foot-thick metal floor of the ship, leaving 2 deep gashes in the actual floor of the ship. He held out a hand, indicating for her to wait as he stuck his head into the gap.
"We go up," he said.
Aaron had no idea what level they were on, and she didn't care. She just wanted to get out of the elevator.
"Wait here," Rickle ordered. "I'll go first and check." "But..."
Aaron opened her mouth, thought for a moment, and closed it again. She wasn't used to taking orders. She was the one who gave orders, the one who went first, the one who took risks on behalf of her squad. She could outgun, outrun, and outthink even the most decorated peacekeeper. But now she was with Rickle, and he was inhuman in every sense of the word. So she let him go first. Aaron stepped back and watched as he pushed her pack and the launcher out onto the floor above. He glanced back at her, winked, and then pulled himself upwards. Underneath his obsidian armor, his muscles bunched and flexed. Aaron stood back and secretly enjoyed the view. It lasted only for a split second, because he moved so damn fast. Then he was up and extending his arm to her. "Come," he said. Aaron looked up and saw a smiling face free of guile. The hard look in his eyes was gone, replaced with nothing but warmth. She stared at his outstretched hand. It was still bare, his silver palm luminous in the soft glow of her guide light. She could easily jump up out of the elevator herself, but when Rickle looked at her like that, how could she brush him off? For some bizarre reason, she got the feeling that if she refused him, he'd be hurt. It seemed stupid, but Aaron didn't want to hurt his feelings. So she gave him a curt nod and placed her hand into his. His warm fingers curled around her hand, and Aaron marveled at the fact that this alien, who was capable of such great violence, could feel so damn human. The very hand that pulled her up was a killer's hand. And yet, he was so gentle with her, applying just the exact amount of pressure needed to help her up onto the ship's floor. He held onto her hand for just a little bit longer than was necessary, helping her to her feet. It was a strange feeling. Thanks, she murmured. Rickle's gaze turned distant as he continued to grasp her hand, his grip tightening. His expression became strange. Aaron froze. "Rickle?" He murmured something in that strange melodic language of his, which Aaron guessed was Cordolian. It sounded like a language that elves might speak, and coming from Rickle's throat, it was oddly beautiful. "Rickle!" Aaron hissed, alarm coursing through her. His body was here, but his mind was wandering. "Rickle!" she said again, injecting force into her voice. That seemed to get a reaction out of him. He blinked, his gaze slowly becoming focused again as he released her hand. He muttered something under his breath that sounded like cursing.
"Are you okay?"
"Yeah."
He turned away, bending to retrieve her pack and the EI launcher.
I can carry these, if you like.
Erin shook her head. I'll take them. The pack contained some sensitive equipment, including some tiny DNA collection devices. The intelligence people wanted her to use them to collect biological material from the Cordolians. Ha! They had made it sound so easy. As for the launcher, that was just a comfort thing. She felt better hauling around a weapon that could at least put a minor burn on a Cordolian warrior, even if it wouldn't kill him. You had a flashback just then, didn't you? She asked the question before the moment slipped away, taking her heavy objects from Rickle. He looked away.
I don't know what that means.
His voice was terse and clipped as he began to walk away. Erin stared after him. His pointed ears were twitching.
I know that look, Rickle, she called, shrugging her pack over her shoulder as she hurried after him.
He ignored her. What had changed? It was as if day had turned to night in the blink of an eye. Erin had seen this before. She'd seen it in the veterans who'd returned from missions to the very far reaches of human-charted territory. They were the men and women who went to the unknown places, the places where new species were encountered, and people disappeared, never to be heard from again. Something had triggered a memory in Rickle, and whatever he'd seen hadn't been pretty, because all of a sudden, he'd become withdrawn. Erin stopped and looked around, trying to get her bearings. They seemed to be on some kind of service level. Dilapidated equipment lined the corridor, and beside her was a series of decommissioned cleaning bots and a stack of rusted spare parts. Why are you even following me, anyway? Rickle turned, and his face was like smooth, polished stone. Once again, he was a perfect stranger. An alien. His barriers were definitely up.
You told me to, he said, his voice flat.
Erin looked up and saw the sector markings on the wall. They were in 7B, which was close to the communication room.
You don't have to follow me, you know. I'm a big girl, and I can find my way from here.
You're right, he said.
Those damn elf ears of his were still twitching. Up above, the lights flickered. As Rickle turned on his heel, tiny black specks started to appear on his face, neck, and the top of his head, quickly becoming denser until they formed an armored black helm that completely concealed his features. He glanced back at her for a brief moment, appearing so cold and menacing in his full suit of armor that her pulse quickened and her mouth went dry. Her fingers flew to the activation panel of the EI launcher. Erin was reminded that he wasn't her friend, no matter how much he professed to like her. Rickle wasn't human, and she wasn't going to make the mistake of forgetting that again, no matter how charming he might be at times. As Erin glared back at him, wondering what the hell had turned him into such a moody bastard all of a sudden, he disappeared without a word, leaving her standing in the service corridor, amongst dead robots, with the lights flickering up above. Chapter 11. Of course Rickle wasn't going to leave her. Not when he'd heard the familiar skittering sound of Zargek larvae in the vents. Not when he'd heard them scratching up and down the elevator shaft. But he was a little bit messed up right now, and he didn't want her to figure that out. It had happened when he'd pulled her up out of the elevator. The memory had been so sharp, burning brightly in his mind. Erin had called it a flashback. For a moment, it had nearly destroyed him. Out of all the First Division warriors, Rickle considered himself the most effective, the most fucked up. That mind-wipe shit the Empire's scientists had tried to pull on them had left him with confounding fragments of memory, like shards of broken glass that couldn't be put back together. The memories could be triggered by almost anything, but he hadn't had a flashback for such a long time. Yet, it had happened when he'd gripped Aaron's arm.
He's clutching her arm, holding on so tightly, but she's too heavy, and she's starting to pull him with her, because his body is just too small. He's only a child, after all. She looks up, smiles at him, and lets go, falling into the abyss below.
Maybe the others had these fragments, too. Maybe they were just better at burying them. Maybe they had better self-control.
She doesn't scream. She just smiles, her eyes overflowing with love for him.
Rickle swore as he stabbed his sword into the wall and made another hole, squeezing through the gap. There were narrow corridors in between the walls containing dead space. They housed all manner of pipes and cables, and even some monitoring devices. He advanced along the dead space and waited until he heard Aaron's steady footsteps, made heavier by the dual load she was carrying. She reached the hole he'd made, paused, sighed, and then moved on, heading further up the corridor. Rickle followed her by sound alone, navigating through the hidden corridor between the walls. Occasionally, he had to duck or crouch, as pipes and machines got in the way, but he had no trouble matching her speed. He tried to rid himself of the bitter aftertaste of that terrible memory, of what he'd seen in his mind's eye when he'd touched Aaron.
She slips out of his grasp. It's his fucking fault, because he isn't able to hold on. He's too weak, too small. He screams as shots ring out, and the crater below lights up with flashes of blue plasma fire.
Rickle followed Aaron as she picked up her pace, her footsteps echoing through the thin metal walls. She walked with fierce purpose. He could almost feel her anger reverberating through her footsteps. He'd probably pissed her off, but he'd had his reasons. An overwhelming wave of emotions had overtaken him. Searing, white-hot anger. Despair, as bitter and black as the Kalidom mines of Kithia. Emptiness, terrifying and unfathomable. He wanted to fight something. He wanted to kill. It was like the bad old days all over again, before he'd learned to be a proper Cordolian. That's why he'd had to leave her, because he'd been afraid she might see something ugly. She was beautiful and pure, and she shouldn't have to put up with his shit. Rickle listened carefully as she stopped. Underneath his helm, his ears twitched as he filtered the various sounds that trickled to him from beyond the walls. One was Aaron's hand touching a door panel. The next was the grind and screech of an elevator as it descended to their level. It was a clumsy, cumbersome thing, like just about everything on this floating metal junk heap. It ground to a halt, and Rickle heard its doors slide open. Rickle stopped moving. The internal corridor snapped abruptly to the left, bending at right angles before continuing. Humans. Everything they built was so primitively linear. Rickle's hearing told him that the elevator shaft was behind the bend. A familiar sound echoed up and down the shaft. Skitter, skitter. Skitter, skitter. Zargek. Shit. They were probably building a nest in there. Wasting no time, Rickle cut a hole in the roof of the low corridor and pulled himself up through the floor. He ended up in a dead space somewhere above the elevator unit. He sliced an opening in the wall beside the shaft and emerged into a dark space that stank of grease and chemicals, mingled with something putrid. He was above her now, standing on the roof of the elevator unit. Aaron had probably heard him making all that noise, but he didn't care. The elevator started to move upwards, propelled along smooth metal tracks by a small motor. Rickle looked up and saw several dark forms nestled in the corners of the elevator shaft. They were Zargek larvae, encased in thick cocoons. They were undergoing metamorphosis. Small larvae swarmed all over the black cocoons, secreting some disgusting sticky substance that coated and reinforced them. Rickle's dagger found its way into his free hand, and he went to work, slashing at the cocoons as the elevator continued its lumbering ascent. At times it would get stuck as it hit the Zargek mess. That's when Rickle would increase the intensity of his thrusts, furiously slashing at the cocoons until they fell apart, spilling the half-metamorphosed bodies of wriggling insects all over him. He ignored them because they couldn't do anything to him in their current state. Instead, he focused on making sure the elevator was able to move.
"Rickle, is that you?"
Aaron's alarmed voice reached him. He ignored her, focusing on the task at hand. The physical exertion felt good. Killing Zargek felt good, even if they were only larvae. He threw all of his anger into it, his slashes and thrusts becoming increasingly savage. They were heading towards the top of the shaft. There was a dark ceiling above, and Rickle dropped to his stomach, flattening his body to avoid getting crushed as the elevator reached the end of its tracks. Of course, the impact wouldn't be able to compress his armor, but it would be damn uncomfortable if he was standing and managed to hit his head. The elevator ground to a halt. He heard the doors swoosh open, and then footsteps as Aaron stepped out and started to run. Hundreds of Zargek larvae swarmed all over Rickle, trying to dig their vicious fangs into him. It didn't matter. His armor deflected everything, and he set to work slicing them in two with absolute precision. He had to hurry and kill as many of them as possible. Aaron was almost out of earshot. Before she got too far away, he carved a hole in the top of the elevator and dropped to the floor. Zargek rained down around him, swarming everywhere as Rickle followed Aaron into the corridor. It was actually quite easy to track her, because her crisp scent lingered in the stale air, creating a perfect trail for him to follow, even when he could no longer hear her footsteps. Zargek larvae swarmed around him, following him. Rickle stabbed them as he ran, leaving a trail of foul carcasses in his wake. Now that they'd infested the freighter proper, there was no way he was leaving Aaron unguarded. It helped that he felt better now. His anger had dissipated, and he was less volatile. Although the terrible haunting memories that had resurfaced would stay with him forever. Chapter 12. Aaron ran, ignoring the flickering lights up above as she headed towards the communications room. The elevator trip had been hellish, with strange thumping and scratching noises coming from above the ceiling. She'd spent the entirety of the brief ride standing with the rocket launcher activated and pointed upwards, just waiting for some nightmare to drop through the roof. Stupidly, she'd yelled Rickle's name, but he hadn't answered. Aaron sprinted past stacks of satellite monitoring equipment, noticing that a faint trace of juvie smoke hung in the air. Someone had been here recently. She wondered who else might be willing or able to put in a secure call to Earth. Rihanna had used the secure line to get through to her, but Rihanna possessed certain special skills that she'd acquired on Earth before her days in the forces. Finally, Aaron reached the comm room. The doors slid open, revealing a brightly lit area filled with panels of blinking equipment. Most of the equipment was rendered useless because of the network blackout enforced by the Federation. But the comm room contained a secure line that was used for distress calls and classified communications. The same line was also connected to the navigation room, but she couldn't afford to have this discussion in front of anyone. Erin scanned the equipment, looking for the familiar shape of a holoscreen. There. She identified the device and sat down, putting her pack and the EI launcher aside. She brought up the input pad, entering a special code that she'd memorized, one that she'd been given by the nameless, dark-suited ghosts back on Earth. The holoscreen flickered as the device did its thing, logging into a secure satellite network.
Yes?
The answering voice came through with a mild degree of distortion and static, the result of a signal being transmitted thousands of miles through space.
Agent E1?
Erin instantly recognized the woman's voice. Moments later, her image appeared on the holoscreen.
Sergeant Varga, I'm assuming this is urgent.
I don't know what your relationship is to the powers that be, but I need to get a message through to the Senate. They need to start getting off their asses and organize an evac mission. It's time to get these people off the freighter.
The Senate is still deliberating on the best course of action. We can't risk any move that might lead to retaliation from the Cordolians. We can't risk any further loss of life, and we still don't understand what their motivations are.
Yes, we do, Erin thought in frustration. They want to kill the Zargek, and that's what we want too. What's so fucking complicated about it?
Politics. She hated politics.
They won't harm us if we honor our end of the bargain, Erin declared.
How can you be so sure?
Trust me, they won't. They won't save us, but they won't intentionally harm us either.
Have you obtained a DNA sample for us yet?
Erin clenched her jaw in frustration. I have not. Now, are you going to help me, or are you going to be obstructionist?
We have procedures to follow. We can't influence the actions of the Senate. The matter is currently under debate.
They've found Zargek on the freighter, Erin informed the woman.
The Senate should reach a decision soon, was her only response,
as if the matter was routine and not absolutely fucking urgent. Her cold indifference was in direct contrast to Erin's rising anger. Did this nameless woman not understand the situation? Sometimes, it felt like the entire world had gone mad, and Erin was the only sane one left. Or perhaps it was the other way around.
So, let me get this straight, E1. You're saying you can't help me right now? We will act when an appropriate course of action has been decided upon. Rest assured, we have your best interests in mind.
You won't help?
We cannot go against protocol.
Erin couldn't believe what she was hearing. Perhaps Murad had been right, and humans had forgotten how to fight a good war. 400-odd years of peace could do that to a race. Go fuck yourself, agent, she whispered as she terminated the comm, paralyzed by anger and disappointment. Unfucking believable. The whole world was nuts. Erin tapped the comm in her ear.
Private Shepard, she said, waiting for the voice recognition system to connect her to Rihanna. At least the ship's internal wireless still worked.
No response, but static. Private Shepard, she said again.
Erin?
Rihanna, get your ass up to the communications room, now. I need you.
But...
In the background, Erin could hear voices. Slurred voices. Drunken voices.
Rihanna, she growled. Have you been drinking? Where the hell are you?
She shook her head.
I don't care. Get up here now, or I'll file a report about a certain illegal hacking activity that happened on Fortuna Tau. If I remember correctly, it was something to do with the X-rated networks.
Don't you dare! Rihanna gasped. I'm on my way, Sarge.
Hurry up. As Erin shut off the comm, she heard those strange noises again. They were like the noises she'd heard in the elevator, except they were louder now. They seemed to be coming from above her.
Thud, thud, tap, 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 skitter, skitter.
Fucking Zargek. Erin stood, hefting the EI launcher onto her shoulder. She set it to activate and waited.
Thud, thud, thud.
Something pierced through the metal roof, a black blade. Erin steeled herself, preparing to shoot. The thudding was deafening now. The blade disappeared, then reappeared, again and again, stabbing dozens of tiny holes in the roof. Something else was stabbing through, too. A giant black claw. Oh, shit. It was a big one.
Rickle? Erin called.
Relief flooded through her. So he hadn't left her after all. He'd just hidden from her. Stubborn Cordolian.
Get out of there, Erin, he shouted,
although his voice was slightly muffled by the layers of metal that separated them.
Take cover.
How the fuck had he gotten into the ceiling in the first place? Erin looked around wildly, but there was nowhere to hide. She did the next best thing and backed into the corridor, keeping her launcher pointed towards the direction of the noise. There was a loud crash, and the ceiling began to fragment into pieces. Two black figures fell through the roof, along with a shower of small, disgusting, swarming Zargek larvae. Erin almost discharged her rocket, but now Rickle was in the way, jumping to his feet as he raised his sword. It met the adult Zargek's giant foreclaws with a loud crack. Erin groaned. Not this again.
Get out! Rickle yelled.
She couldn't see his face. It was hidden behind his menacing visor. He was a black whirlwind of savage motion, matching the Zargek blow for blow as it tried its best to cut his head off. Erin took one look at the scenario before her and obeyed, dashing out into the corridor, the sliding doors closing behind her. She was met with a swarm of Zargek larvae, approaching her from the direction of the elevator. In the ceiling, just before the elevator, there was a giant black hole through which spilled various wires and bits of debris, along with the occasional Zargek hatchling. Erin swore and lifted her rocket launcher, preparing to rain a firestorm down on the Zargek larvae. The damn things gave her the creeps, and there was no way she was going to let any of them so much as even touch her boots. She was about to fire when the light above the elevator flashed, indicating that someone was about to step off.
Shit!
Erin held her fire as the doors opened. She lowered the launcher and pulled out her bolt gun. Rihanna appeared, and the Zargek larvae swarmed towards her. She screamed. Erin ran towards her, firing at the larvae that skittered at her feet. Every time she hit one, it would explode in a burst of foul-smelling liquid. Rihanna found her gun and started shooting, but her aim was way off. One of her shots narrowly missed Erin as she sprinted towards the elevator, her long legs covering the distance with powerful strides.
To me, Rihanna, don't shoot, just dodge. Hurry up and get out of there before they box you in.
The private blinked, looked at Erin, then glanced down at the Zargek larvae that were swarming all over the place. As three of them rushed towards her, she made a giant leap and started to sprint, easily dodging the oval-shaped black creatures as they ambulated around on their multiple tiny legs. Horrid things. Several loud crashes echoed from the communications room, and Erin hoped Rickle was getting the real threat under control. Rihanna reached Aaron's side, breathing heavily.
this what you called me up here for? I wish you'd asked the rest of the squad, boss.
Aaron squeezed off two shots, hitting a couple of Zargek that were trying to sneak up on them from behind. The situation's changed, she said. Had no idea these things were swarming all over the place until afterwards.